You're tuned to The Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana are back with us this Friday, first Friday of the month, March 3rd, 2006. Carol and Jim are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dog behavior and training. If you'd like to talk with them, give us a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Good afternoon. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Celeste.
How's everything with all the dogs? Carol, you're two, and Jim, I don't know how many you and Robin have at the moment.
Dogs.
Lots of dogs.
Lots of dogs.
Everything's fine with my two.
Good.
And we have an addition of another pet, Aquaman.
Aquaman?
Aquaman is...
Aquaman is not a pet. He's a superhero.
Aquaman is a betta fish.
Ah.
And I came home last night. I've let Andy out free now. We're testing the water. And she's been quite good. And I came home last night, and she was running around with, I panicked because it looked like a pill bottle in her mouth. And I saw stuff on the floor, and I thought, oh, my God, I don't think about things like that. But she had found Aquaman's food up on the bookcase. And her little Aquaman brother, I told her, I said, he doesn't get any food tonight because you ate all his food. Dogs like fish food.
Ooh, fishy bits, yeah.
Yeah, so in case people haven't recognized that. They love fish food.
Fish food, keep it in the cupboard, huh?
Yes, I learned a good lesson.
I bet he smelled really interesting, huh?
The fish?
The dog.
Oh.
After...
Because
the
smelled
fish
like
food
fish. Kind of smelled just like fish.
Kind
it was
of
awful.
Smells fishy.
Yeah, but that wasn't enough to...
My dog got his nose cut off. How does he smell? Awful.
Ba-doom.
But anyway, so if people, that's just another little thing. How she found the fish food, though, because it's in a container and the lid was on it and it was up next to his little domicile up there on the bookcase. And but that means that told me two things. Number one, she was prowling around looking for something, and then she was rewarded because the fish food was there. So she will haunt that site frequently until I find another place for his replacement fish food.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that maybe she could smell that fish food as well.
Oh, fish food smells, really strong.
Even so.
So it doesn't matter that there was a nice little container and the lid. I mean, it's probably been driving her nuts since he came home to stay with us.
How are things out at Poker Flats?
We just got back on Sunday from another trip up north for a week of dog sledding. I've brought pictures for everyone.
Oh, that's why there
see.
Was snow, because there wasn't snow at Christmas, right?
Not as much. Not nearly as much.
Some, pretty nice amount of snow here.
Where were you?
Nicolet National Forest up near Eagle River.
Oh, okay.
Way up there, 500 miles north.
Keith has an aunt and uncle that live up there. It's beautiful. If you like snow, it's snow forever up there.
We got as far as Rhinelander and developed a leak in our coolant system. So we spent the night in Rhinelander till the next day when we could get it fixed.
Well, everybody's having a great time here running.
Yeah, that's a puppy, Candy, who was actually here in the studio a couple months ago. And she's big enough now we put her on a team. Not that they went very far, but
she's and cute.
Not that she did any pulling, but... she ran along with the team.
Yeah. If this is the first time you've caught us, Jim and Robin raise malamutes. They're beautiful, beautiful animals. So that's great. You got up there and got into some snow. What do you guys do when there isn't any snow and you want to work the dogs and it's cold enough to do it?
Well, when it's cold enough, we have wheeled carts. They have three wheels, kind of like a chariot. Except those have two wheels, right? And if it's cool enough, then we will run those. You're kind of limited. Once up north, there wasn't much snow, and we took the carts with us. And if there was snow, the wheeled carts wouldn't go very far. And if there wasn't snow, the trails were so covered with weeds and fallen logs that we couldn't get over them with the carts. So
Didn't you use the cart at some of the demos we've done in the past?
Yeah, if we run the carts on roads or on groomed trails in parks and things like that. But for training, out where we live, they're out in the country, there are a lot of dirt roads, and we will run on those. But it's got to be fairly cool.
Yeah.
In the summer, the dogs have time off, you know, work on their tans.
Because they just get too warm. Right?
Yeah. Well, they get too warm, and the Arctic dogs will slow way down, and they just aren't active. They're almost like hounds.
Oh, I heard they had to manufacture snow for the beginning of the Iditarod. Had you heard that?
Well, I don't. It may be the case. They have a symbolic start of the race in downtown Anchorage. And, of course, the citizens of Anchorage don't like to have a lot of snow on the road, so they clear it off. But to start the race, then they have to bring snow back in.
Yeah, well, I'd heard that there wasn't enough snow for it this year. It's another fluky weather pattern, but...
It's global warming.
Mm-hmm.
Or nuclear testing or something.
But it must be starting soon, because I know our pilot friend is up there, and she said she'd be there for the start.
Starts
of the
this weekend. Yeah,
and they had to bring in snow for it, which I thought was pretty interesting. Mm.
You mentioned demonstrations of the racing, mm-hmm. dog racing, or dog sledding. Anything coming up in terms of the club and demonstrations?
We have a tracking test at the end of the month out at Kennecuck Cove. You can check out the details on the website. The tracking test is actually on Sunday, the 26th. On the 25th, we lay down when I say we, I mean other people, lay down the people that actually work, lay down the tracks, they outline the tracks, and then on Sunday they actually do the trial. And I love it. It's not a high-action thing. You know, you're going out, there's one dog, and...
It's fun to watch.
They're hundreds of yards away, but it's fun.
Well, we should explain what that is.
Well, you explain, Carol.
The team, the dog and the handler, as Jim described, they plot the course on the day before and lay the track. When he says lay the track, they walk the track, and there'll be an item or two that are laid along the track, and the dog has to find it by sniffing.
Following the trail. And the trail, for our purposes, is 400 yards long, at least. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And generally, it's only through grass. I don't think we're doing the...
Variable surface?
The variable surface, where they go across roads, and so the surface changes for the dog. It's all grass.
Well, let's talk with a listener who's waiting to talk with us on a cell phone on line one. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Paula.
Hi, Paula.
And I'm in my car right now. Sorry, I just put the earphone in. I just wanted to let you know that I'm a transplant from Anchorage, Alaska. I spent 10 years there. And I got to help out with the Iditarod 1 year with the guy. His name is Terry Adkins, and he was from a rookie. And if anyone gets an opportunity to go witness the Iditarod or to go help with it, I would strongly recommend it. Those dogs are absolutely awesome.
Okay.
Thank you. That would be fun.
Yeah. Oh.
Didn't we talk to some... There she is.
You're coming and going.
I'm sorry. Okay. I just wanted to let you know about my dog family I have. I have a rescued greyhound.
Mm-hmm.
I have a combination of chow and golden retriever. Mm-hmm. And I have a dapper gray miniature dachshund. And I have a very complete family.
Sounds that way.
And they all get along, which is easy for two strong personality dogs.
That's quite a crew.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, great.
And do you guys have a website or something I can go to? Because if I can see you guys train your puppies, I'd love to see it.
Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Google it.
Mm-hmm. That's what we do.
And, yeah.
It's easier.
I have it in my favorites thing, so I never know the URL. But
okay. All right, I'll do that. And I'm wearing my Iditarod T-shirt just because it's Iditarod Week in Anchorage.
Well, good for you.
Okay. Thank you so much for your program.
Thanks for calling in this afternoon.
Actually, while we were up in Eagle River, we watched a movie called Chili Dogs.
Oh, I saw that.
It's an awful movie.
It's horrible.
It's terrible. But
what's his name? Cuba Gooding, isn't he?
No, that's Snow Dogs.
Oh, Snow Dogs.
This is Chili Dogs. It was supposed to be like Airplane, the movie Airplane was, except for the Iditarod. And the protagonist, though, the reason I bring this up, had a team much like this woman's. They had a who was the
greyhound and a
they had
dachshund.
A bulldog and some mix that no one could identify, and a golden, and just a whole. And of course, he won the Iditarod with a totally untrained team of these dogs. And
you know what movie I want to see is Eight Below.
Robin saw Eight Below.
Oh, what did you? It got good reviews. I don't.
She liked it.
Upsetting movie, I think. But
well, the actual facts are more upsetting than the movie.
It was based on a true story. So,
what's the true story?
Well,
in the 50s, there was a Japanese expedition.
Okay, it was based on that one then.
In Antarctica, and today you can't take dogs to Antarctica, but in those days they used dogs quite a lot. And winter was coming, so they were loading up the boats. And weather being what it is in Antarctica, once they got all the people onto the boats, a storm came up, and they couldn't get back to take the dogs. So they left the dogs there all winter. They were all staked out on tie lines.
That's what I couldn't bear to see that part. But.
And about 8 or 10 were able to get off the lines, break the lines. When they came back the next summer, two dogs were still alive. And one, they don't know how those dogs Antarctic winters are very cold.
And wasn't it like the worst storm in Antarctica history that survived that winter?
It's hard to say in Antarctic history because there's a lot of storms in Antarctica.
Yeah.
But they don't know how those dogs lived, and they don't know, of course, how the other dogs died either. They never found them. That's the story. Well, this gets Disneyfied, and it's Americans, and it's more recent, and more of the dogs live, but some do die. In the movie, I take it from my report from Robin.
I know it got good reviews. But
in Antarctica, usually in the winter, it's dark all the time because the sun goes down and it doesn't come up for several months. But in the movie, of course, there are seagulls or pigeons or something flying around with the dogs.
Well, that's what they ate.
Probably the real dogs ate seals that had died and they were able to eat those, or maybe penguins that they don't stay there all year round, but for much of the year, they stay on the coast. So maybe that's how they live, but they don't really.
Yeah, I'd like to see the movie, but I get my anxiety level gets too high if it's animals in peril.
Yeah, if you go to the movies for entertainment, you don't want to see. I don't want to see sad stuff. I want to see happy stuff.
Yeah,
I don't go there to see reality.
I saw Brokeback Mountain.
I can go outside the movie and see.
And
reality.
That was good. I enjoyed that, but that made me think.
What's
about.
What's that about? I've heard so much about but I don't know what the movie's about.
Watch the Academy Awards Sunday night, Oscars. It was great, but I do love animal movies. But
somebody gets injured in the hills or something? They break their back? Or what?
I prefer to watch them at home, so if I get hysterical crying,
you can take a break.
Watching me.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with us this afternoon. They join us on the first Friday of the month. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dog behavior and training. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us with questions about dogs, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. I wanted to mention an event that people might be interested in coming up on March 15th at Parkland. Have you heard about this? This is
Beware the Ides of March.
How to safely meet and greet a strange dog.
Yes, I did know about that. And there were, was it 2 weeks ago, I think? There were two seminars that were presented on that very topic. I couldn't attend either, but the ones people I know that went thought it was marvelous.
Yeah, it says, understand what their body language means to you and what your body language means to them. Also learn how to safely handle your own dogs. Great workshop for parents and kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Wednesday, March 15th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Parkland College, room D230. There is a course fee, and the deadline for registration is March 8th. And the number for more information is 351-2546, 351-2546. Got any advice for, I was a couple weekends ago, I went to the shelter and adopted a cat. And lots of lovely animals at the shelter. One of the questions I had, though, was, you know, how do you approach an animal that you don't know? And for me and this cat that I connected with, it was love at first sight. But when you are trying to, you're going and you're looking for a dog, let's say, and you want to approach a dog in the kennel, how do you do that?
There's good advice out there, but following it is a different story because we all know how to do it, but I know when I saw Andy out at the shelter, I didn't do the things that, you know, you approach them not head on, but kind of to the side, and you don't make eye contact necessarily. But I saw her, and I'm like, oh, she's just so cute. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't take my eyes off of her. So, but that's really the best way is, you know, you don't want to come across real forceful. You just you kind of stand with your body kind of tilted and look sideways instead of, you know,
move slowly,
like,
I would
like I'm
imagine.
Looking at you, like right in the eyes. You don't do that. And move slowly. Mm-hmm. Just use a little common sense so you know, so you're not a threat to the dog or perceived as a threat to the dog, but that you're respectful of the distance and their privacy.
Yeah. And the volunteers are really great.
Yeah, so, and the volunteers are trained on how to get the dogs in and out of the kennels with the minimum of fuss. And our dog walking program is great because the dogs really thrive on that.
Yeah.
But it's using, you know, but knowing what to do and actually employing those tactics are two different things.
Yeah. I saw a young man, I don't know how old he was, but he was maybe a teenager, and he was having a great time. Because I've been out there now over the course of the time it took to find the cat that I wanted to adopt and get him home and all that. I was there like 3 days in a row. And this young man was there, this youngster was walking the dog, and he was having a great time.
We have such a dedicated group of volunteers. Yeah. We couldn't do what we do without them, not at all.
Yeah. Any events?
I was thinking of one. Monday, this is not the dog training club related, but Monday night at the, I think it's Urbana High School, it's part of Urbana Adult Education, there is a class on, it's a one-night event on your dog, home alone dogs, how to provide for your dog that's left home alone during the course of the day. And I believe it's at 6. You can probably call Urbana Adult Education and find out more. I think it's $5 for the class. And then there's another one maybe in 2 weeks on canine nutrition. These are both presented by Linda Case. So it's, you know, it's going to be good. And I know some people are going Monday night. I might if I think I have class Monday night, but we're dropouts. And I didn't go on the 13th because it was Westminster, my birthday. And then I thought the following weekend I was sick that Monday night. I didn't feel good that week. And so this week I thought, I can't go. I'm an instructor. I can't go and have the worst dog in the whole class. I can't do that.
Everybody thinks they have the worst dog.
So I'll just start the session, which begins the first week in April. I'll start another session and be very diligent about going every week. But
here's an do we have somebody?
Not at the moment.
Okay, here's an amusing story, maybe. I was teaching a class, a beginning class. And at the end of the class, this woman came up to me and very tearful and said, I know I have the worst dog in the class, and I know he's not learning. I said, no, don't judge by other dogs. Every dog's having their own problems, and you're doing fine. And reassured, she left. And another woman came up tearfully, said, I know I have the worst dog in the class. And I said, no, you don't. The woman that just left has the worst dog.
And that's probably a very true story.
It was.
I'm not to-
It's true. That's what I said. I said, so don't worry about it. In terms of the club, tomorrow, and this is not open to the public, but the club is giving a fly ball and agility demonstration for a Boy Scout conference over at the high school. Anyway, there's a Boy Scout conference, and part of that is our club is putting on this demonstration in the gym. I won't be there, but I don't have any.
Yeah, I want to get started in agility and fly ball with her too. But we do a lot of demos. I know we do the fly ball demos at the basketball games are hugely received by the audience, and then we'll do softball, we do soccer, we do men's baseball, women's softball.
Does it take long to train a dog to do fly ball?
It takes to do it to a year.
A year.
Yeah. You know, they'll pick up on it pretty quickly. I know Robbie did very quickly. He really liked it. But for them to be trained to a level that you can be fairly confident that they will tend to the business at hand and not go darting off in a different direction, about a year. Mm-hmm. Some longer. There's no average. Some.
Yeah, the actual problem isn't training them to go and get the fly ball. It's training them to do it when there's a whole lot of excitement and a whole lot of other dogs. Because the other dog's tennis ball always looks...
They all look the same.
Always looks better than the one you've got.
Isn't that the truth?
And you got to say, no, you got to leave their tennis balls. You have to get your own and come back this
come
way.
Back
don't go visiting.
All, yeah.
Although I will say that the audience does love it when the dogs make little doggy mistakes and they'll get in the other lane or they'll drop the ball. And so and I know that because I emcee the some of these demonstrations and the crowd gets really into it and loud. So the dogs have to be flexible enough and resilient enough to deal with that noise level they're not accustomed to. So.
Yeah, and you do this from time to time at the assembly hall, right?
Mm-hmm,
wow.
Mm-hmm.
I had a dog, Joe, in obedience. Joe was a big dog. He was huge. But he was not a bad worker, but he liked to mess around a little bit, and especially at Malamute Specialties where it's just us folks, people would start laughing. And Joe would pick up on that, and whatever he was doing, he'd do even more. And of course, it was the wrong thing to do. That's why people were laughing. And I'm, you know, telling people, "Quit laughing! You're screwing up my dog."
Class clown.
Oh, he was. I've got videos of him making profound mistakes, and his tail is just wagging.
I know we've said this before, but Jim showed these videos at one meeting, and it was hilarious. We were laughing till we were crying because the dogs do. They respond to all of our emotions. If you laugh, you better make sure that you're going to see that behavior again.
Yeah, it's not as funny for the handler at the time. In fact, it's pretty tragic.
Which is why I didn't laugh last night. I didn't get angry with her about eating Aquaman's food. But I
How do you know it's a man? That's
Aquaman, I don't know. It's a male beta.
How do you know?
That's what they told me.
Oh.
That's why he's in solitary confinement. He can't have a buddy. But
they're good fighters. You can put two in and watch them.
Oh, you put a mirror up to the aquarium.
Oh, really?
Too. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of cruel, though.
I did it
one day, and I thought, well, this is rather pointless.
If you had several and one was the dominant one, would that one be the alpha beta?
See, he's so clever. I can hardly stand it. So at any rate, I didn't get angry with her for eating his food. And I didn't laugh either. I was just very matter of fact. I said, "What is this on the floor?" And she, you know, it's like people say they know my tone of voice. It wasn't the can of food; it was my tone of voice that she was reacting to. So I, you know, once I realized that she hadn't ingested, you know, any of Keith's heart medication, and I calmed down for that. Then I put them out and I cleaned it up, and there was no evidence of it when she came back in, aside from the aroma in the carpeting where she'd eaten it. But nothing I could
she'd
do about that.
She'd eaten the carpet, or the...
she'd eaten the fish food that had fallen into the carpeting.
Well, there's some danger she might eat the carpeting, you know.
I thought about that. So I vacuumed it quite well last night.
She wouldn't want to eat the carpeting, but...
She wants to get more of the fish flakes.
It'll taste fishy, so that's close enough for a lot of dogs.
And I didn't want to shampoo it and get it wet because I thought that would make it worse. So you just never know. You know, you never know what's going to really mess up your night where you're going to spend an hour vacuuming fish food out of the carpeting. But that's how it goes. But, you know, you just, you know, you have to keep the event in proportion to the incident. You know, I just thought, now, some people would probably go nuts if they came home and saw that their fish food had been eaten. Not because the fish food reason, because the dog did something wrong. And I just thought, you know, there's worse things in life.
Yeah, well, you'll learn just to put everything away, right?
Yeah. That's the bottom line. You put things away.
My brother Chris's dog, Sassy, would eat anything that was out, you know, any food item. I mean, it could be a box of Jell-O powder that was lying on the counter, and the dog would yum, 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 yuck. What a mess, too.
Yeah. Oh, so I found out something really exciting last weekend.
What is it?
I found a new source for dog bones, raw bones.
And you're going to tell everybody?
I am.
Okay.
Old Time Meat and Deli. I walked in there last Saturday.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, you'd think it would make sense for all meat departments to have bones. I mean, they have, that's where the meat comes from, but they don't. And I know that you guys go to the...
Quiet.
That's right. So anyway, but that, I don't like going there because you can't choose what you want. They just give you a big bag of them.
Yeah, well.
So at any rate, so I walked in there last week and Saturday, and the man must have thought I was nuts. I was so happy to see these bones, and they were nice and pristine, and you could get whatever, their femur bones, so you didn't have all that other junk to deal with. And I brought those home and popped them in the freezer, and then Saturday night, they each got their bone. Oh, I was a goddess the whole night. I could have done nothing wrong. They thought that was the best. So then I went back on Sunday and got some more, and then I got one for my friend Barb for her dog. And now I've told everybody, so if I go tomorrow, yeah, I'm sure they'll have none. But.
Well, when I was a kid at the supermarket, they actually did cut meat on the premises, but there aren't very many places that do that anymore.
No, and they have bones, but sometimes they have, what do you call those big, like big knuckle bones? It's like their knee.
We call them
knuckle,
yeah, but they're not knuckle bones.
Yeah,
but they're,
and I don't like those. I just...
There's a lot of
cartilage.
Cartilage is the word I was looking for.
Yeah, you know, that's just not me. I like neat things, pristine things, if you will.
Even the Malamute jaws can't make a big dent in the femur.
No. You know, you don't have to worry because
the lawnmower does, though. That's the problem.
like hooves and stuff like that, sometimes it just makes me cringe. I'll hear them crunching on those and I'm... You know, and I thought, oh, I don't want them to break a tooth on this stuff. But I'm much more comfortable giving them the raw femur bone. I don't cook them. And I put them in the freezer to get that marrow nice and frozen so that it takes longer to get out. And they're happy. Smell's not too great, though.
No, it's not.
It smells very good, but better than fish.
But you're a goddess.
I am not kidding you. And they both looked at me like, you are the best.
They take them outside and they chew them and then they fight over them and then they bring them in the house. Well, what happens when you take a...
Do you get a little dirt on there that won't come off?
Not dirt, but little tiny creatures will crawl in them and then the dog brings them in. So now you got a house full of ants and who are all having a convention in the...
Yeah. I don't mind if they have
living room
in the
floor.
Ugh. That is... I forgot about that part of it, but there's...
Dog ownership isn't all beer and Skittles. Or Skittles and beer, sorry.
Yeah, it can be. I was talking to my neighbor the other day when I was home for lunch, and it was so lovely, and I had them out. And I love to garden, and I like things pretty and nice. And the year that Robbie was a puppy, that year we did not have a really pretty and nice yard because, you know.
He helped you garden.
He ripped stuff out of the ground. And
let me cultivate this
and
you know,
this too shall pass, and, you know. Mm-hmm. It's fine. You can't lose any sleep over it. So I'm standing there talking to Diane the other day, and she looked. I said, "Did she just dig that hole?" And she had, in a nanosecond, stood there and dug a hole right in the middle of the yard. And I thought, "Oh, I forgot about this stuff. I forgot." So it just requires a little extra vigilance on your part to make sure that they're, you know. But I guess if you've never seen anything like this before, you know. See what's underneath that green stuff. Dig a hole.
Oh, they can smell something under there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Worms, perhaps.
See, I cause my own problems with Robbie because in order to teach him to be inquisitive and fearless and bold, I filled those treat dispensing balls I'd fill them with little treats, and I'd toss it out in the middle of the yard, and he'd root it around, and a little biscuit would fall out. And I think he felt that if he dug these holes or he rooted things up, more biscuits would appear, despite the absence of this dispensing treat ball. I don't know what his thought process was, but he was constantly hunting for morsels in the yard for months after I put that ball away. So
that's because he's a dog, and they actually have no thought process.
Nah, they do.
Questions about dogs are invited this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with us this afternoon. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us on the first Friday of the month to talk with us about dog behavior and training. If you've got a question, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL.
Here we go.
Somebody's going to join us here momentarily on line one. Before we got going this afternoon, I saw Jim talking with Ed Kieser, and next week is Severe Weather Preparedness Week in Illinois and Indiana, and it gave me an idea for a question for you two.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to preparing for an emergency, whether it's a weather emergency or a medical emergency, first aid kind of thing, what would you recommend people think about in terms of being ready, being prepared, having things all ready to go if you're an animal owner?
Make sure your dog's microchipped.
Yeah.
And your cat. Make sure you get them, just do it, because tags get lost, collars don't get put on, and that type of thing. So we just talked about that with Hurricane Katrina, how many animals could have been reunited with their owners if there had been some ID? So that's not exactly the question you're asking.
But you also want to have a carrier?
Have your carrier out. You know, and I'm a bad because I have very high anxiety during storms, so it would be good for somebody like me that gets upset to have everything ready to go.
When I was on the board of the Humane Society, we talked frequently about having a disaster plan for the county. Are you still doing that?
Mm-hmm. We're still talking about it.
But I got
I answered the question.
Not quite ready.
But no, the Hurricane Katrina made us realize that, you know, we'd be the last resort for a lot of people if they had to leave. They have to leave their animals somewhere, so we have to take them. But we have to be ready, too, to perhaps evacuate, so.
Let's talk with a listener now. Caller on line one in Champaign. Hi. Hello?
I was just wondering. I've got a min pin. He's about 6 years old, and whenever I get ready to go to work, he just goes absolutely crazy. He runs around the place and barks and everything else. Would you have any suggestions?
How about that class that's coming up?
Oh, Dog Humble. Yeah, did you hear us talk about that earlier? Urbana Adult Education is offering a course, a small one-night event Monday night, this coming Monday night, on dogs left home alone, things you can do to, and they'll address that very issue, to reduce the anxiety that comes along with your leaving. I'm sure Urbana Adult Education has a phone number in the...
Sure.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
You can try. It's really a learned behavior. The dog realizes that you're leaving. Dogs being keen observers, thank you. I talk for a living. Of our behavior. So as you're getting ready, the dog knows you're going to leave. And just the stress of your leaving is what happens. I'd try leaving faster, you know, just getting out of there. Assuming the dog calms down after you leave, which is hard to say unless you video it. Or go through a different routine. Or go through your routine to leave and then don't leave.
Okay.
But what the dog is doing is seeing you leaving and getting anxious. So if you can either change that, what you do, or do it and not leave, just to get the dog over so that he learns a different behavior.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Unless it's some neurotic anxiety that you deal with.
Yeah.
With
drugs. What about leaving something like some goodie tucked into one of these treat balls or something?
Yeah, or a hollow bone filled with peanut butter, and keep a couple of those in the freezer. And and then, hand those out when you leave.
Rogerson used to say, as you're walking out, you grab a handful of, and Rogerson was an animal behaviorist.
He still is. He's not dead.
He's not dead? Well, then he said, anyway, grab a handful of food and toss it and then go out the door, and the dog becomes so
busy
eating the food or cookies or whatever you throw that the dog doesn't notice that you've left. But that, he admitted, was a temporary solution.
Yeah, some dogs do get extremely anxious about, and there's not a real quick fix. Now, his problem doesn't sound too bad. The dog calms down, but for some animals, it causes a terrific strain and problem on the family because they become destructive. So,
although a min pin, which for those who don't know, is short for miniature pincher, and they're a very small dog. And min pin people are probably going to call up and say, that's not true. But the amount of destruction they can do probably is only a fraction of what
a Great Dane,
one of our dogs.
Well, I mentioned Great Dane. We had one at the shelter, and the poor boy has separation anxiety, and he's been brought back 3 times. And, you know, what we have to do.
Which certainly helps his separation anxiety.
Yeah. But you have to find a family that's not gone all the time.
Yeah.
And the last home he was in, they were great people, but they came home and he had chewed up their down comforter off their bed. So, you know, and then he caused some problems. The other dogs didn't like his behavior, so they had problems. It was just not a good fit. And sometimes you think it is, but then you've got a dog of that size that's going to exhibit some severe anxiety through destructive behaviors. Then you need somebody to help you pretty quick.
If it was just a blanket, it wouldn't have been as bad. But I have this image of
feathers
everywhere.
Comforter. Yeah, and these things do happen. And this is where commitment comes into play. And I'm not faulting these other people, but commitment comes into play because you just can't pass your problem off to somebody else, which is probably why we got him in the first place. But, you know, stick with it and work with it. And I think part of the reason that we have shelters and humane societies and all these welfare organizations is because of a lack of commitment on people's part. They don't want to work through these problems. And what did you say? Beer and Skittles? Is that the...
Beer,
yeah,
and,
it,
beer
no,
and
it, it's true. Life is not...
Skittles and beer?
With cats.
Mm-hmm.
I think the number one reason that cats are in shelters is because of litter box issues.
Although people don't own up to that.
No, they don't want to tell anybody about that.
No.
But that's one of the primary reasons cats are relinquished. And many of these problems can be solved. Heck, Shelly didn't use a litter pan for the last 5 years of her life. And you know, what I did, it was just Keith and me. We've got a walk-in shower off the family room downstairs. So I turned that into, I kept a litter box there under the pretense that maybe one day she'd use it. But I put down plastic. I lined the floor of the shower with newspapers. I put the litter box in there with litter because I was under the illusion that she'd use it one day. But she would use the newspaper. That's not a satisfactory solution for a lot of people, mm-mm, but it worked for me because I would just go in and clean it up every night, remove the layer of paper, and put another down.
Yeah.
I guess I was committed to the nth degree because she lived to be 19 or something, but, you know, what else was I going to do?
Yeah. When someone comes to relinquish an animal, what does the shelter ask? What do they want to know about the animal that's coming
in? If you look on the cage cards, they'd like to know if it's good with other dogs, with cats, with women, children, men, friendly with strangers, if they're house trained. Same thing with cats, you know. Are they litter box trained? And people, for the most part, I like to think are honest, and they'll say, no, they're not necessarily, this dog is not necessarily good with children.
If people were honest, I couldn't make a living.
Oh, it's right.
Jim's an attorney.
He's always a nice balance to any conversation.
So
but, you know,
not too much honesty, please.
But you'd like to think they're, and with litter box issues, the cats in the shelter, you know, they have the community cat room, but they're in cages, and there really is no option other than to use the litter pan. It's when you get them home. But, I don't know. There's a humane education seminar, and one I attended several years ago, and it was Linda Case was the speaker, and she talked about commitment, and it really was eye opening because those of us that are so, you know, look at Jim and Robin. If you weren't committed, where would they be? But we all have that. I think that that sense of commitment. So to me, it's kind of out of the realm when people just are so casual about disposing of an animal because it's got some behavior issues. I don't know. That's just the way I feel.
Yeah. Well, when I went to the shelter, they have reasons listed on, there's like a bulletin board or something, and they have reasons listed, top reasons people relinquish animals. And elimination problems and litter box issues were not on the cat list at all. So, and I know that that's a problem.
Yeah, because you talk to people and they'll tell you it's a problem. I mean, people at work ask me, you know, what to do when their cat won't use the litter box. And I'm not even a cat person, so it is an issue.
Well, I've always said on with dogs, on housebreaking problems, that the dog can bite the kids forever and people will put up with it. But if they pee on the rug, then they get put down. Housebreaking issues are actually life and death issues as far as the dog's concerned. Attacking people, strangely, is not a life and death issue. And most of the dog people I know have exactly the opposite attitude.
Yeah.
You get a vicious dog and you got a problem, whereas if they pee in the house, it's not a major issue.
You mentioned Linda Case. She's got a couple of good books out for both the dog and the cat. And there are other books that you can kind of turn to.
Oh, you know, it's amazing. I just read one the other day that was so funny, What the Dog Did by Emily Yaffe, I think is her name. And then Marley and Me is like on the – there's a plethora. I love that word.
Plethora?
A plethora.
I thought it was plethora.
Plethora. Plethora.
Okay.
Well, of great dog books out there, great animal books out there. And this one, What the Dog Did, you know, because sometimes those of us that like dogs kind of cringe when you read what people, you know, what they expect and what their expectations are and they're not met. But it's a woman that got her first dog, and she was real candid about, you know, how horrible it was at times, things that the dog did. And Marley and Me is the same way. But, they're, you know, I was reading an article when the author, I can't think of his name, of Marley and Me would – he's a journalist, and when he would write about his dog, he got...
Bob Marley?
No. He got tons of responses to his columns when he included the dog. And that's on my next to my list to read.
Yeah. John Katz has written a number of books where he talks about how he has come to know and respect and have a bit greater, better understanding of his animals. And I know he's a big fan of the Border Collie.
Which yeah, but his latest dog is a yellow lab. He went back to his yellow labs. And you gave me that book.
Yeah, Cats on Dogs.
We interviewed him.
That's right, we did, didn't we? That's right.
Yeah,
we interviewed him.
Yeah, strangely. And
on this
program right here. Yeah. And I read the book. And one of the border collies is shipped to him by plane, and he's at Newark Airport or someplace. And I'm reading this, and I know what's going to happen. He's going to open that crate inside the airport. The dog, who's been sitting there watching the door for hours in terror, as soon as that door is open, that dog's out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. He opens it up and boom, this black and white streak goes by. And he spent the next hour chasing the poor animal up and down the hallways of Newark Airport.
But the Cats on Dogs is really quite good. I enjoy that.
Yeah, and
that.
There are two previous books as well. So, yeah.
Maybe three. Yeah, he's written quite a lot, and he's very honest about he knew nothing, and every day he learns a little bit more. So
I think
it's refreshing.
One of the books that I really enjoyed reading of his was The New Work of Dogs, and that gets at the problem of what we expect and how we look at that, how we look at an animal, and.
Yeah, and he's a philosopher, so he's got a little different approach to things. But I find his work very interesting. So.
Okay. Well,
why is his name Katz and not Dogs?
It's K-A-T-Z.
But why?
That's what he was born as, Katz.
Okay.
That's it.
Why does he
We're
have
out
dogs?
Of time. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
We'll see you next month.
We'll see you in April. Wow. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel will join us on the first Friday of April. They join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dog behavior and training. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. You'll find the club's number in the phone book, and you can find them on the web. Just put in Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana into your browser, and up they'll come. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon.